Welcome to my podcast From Chaos to Peace with Connie. I am Connie Graf and your host, and I will explore with you how a few minutes a day can keep the chaos away. And with chaos, we're talking about the physical, digital, social, financial, mental, emotional, and spiritual clutter that can accumulate in our life and business. In every episode, I want to make you aware how clutter is so much more than you think, how it affects your finances, and how clearing your clutter leads to more time, more money, and more peace. Let's go. Well, hello, my friend. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Connie Graf, your host. Thank you so much for allowing me back into your ears. Please subscribe and follow my podcast if you haven't done so yet. Thank you very much for your support. I'm very excited to welcome Allison Smith to the podcast. She's using nature's metaphors to help you see the wood for the trees when you're stuck and don't know what to do. I really enjoyed talking with Allison, not just because she uses nature. As you know, I love nature, live on acreage, and have a certificate in permaculture. But also because she's so lively when she talks, just a bit like me when I'm not reserved and awkward, like right now. So Alice and I, we talked about how and when she started using nature's metaphors in her coaching or in her work, how we can get others to listen to us, and why her approach works. When and why she wrote a poem for a brick wall, yes, she did, how we can landscape our life, and the benefits of swimming in cold water. Brr, she almost convinced me. Okay, without further ado, here is the awesome conversation with the lovely Allison Smith. Welcome, Allison. I'm very excited to have you as a guest on my podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I was very excited to invite you. Please tell my audience, where in the world are you located? And also one thing about you that might surprise them, and that has nothing to do with what we're talking afterwards.
I'm in Scotland. I'm across the Forth from Edinburgh. So if I look out of my office window, I look across the sea, across to the sort of Edinburgh on the skyline, which is lovely. What might people find surprise? I don't think it's a surprise once you know me that I go open water swimming. I do a bit of gardening. Well, no, that's not a surprise.
That's also not a surprise. We just wanted to say.
Yeah, no. It's like, what's a surprise? I've had a new knee a year ago. In fact, what has surprised me is, so it's a surprise for me, is how much more walking I'm doing, and therefore how the pain associated with my knee was stopping me walking beforehand, and I had no idea whatsoever. And now I'm sort of actively choosing to go for longer walks. Oh yeah, let's park at this car park, not that one. So yeah, that's been a surprise for me about how much pain can unconsciously stop us doing things, really.
Yeah, it's funny that you say unconsciously, because kind of like you would think we realize it, right?
Yeah, you would.
But sometimes as humans, we're so funny, right? It's like in front of our nose and we don't see it.
Well, I think it was just the avoiding the pain. So you don't, I didn't realize, and also the energy sapping nature. So some of it was the fact that I was very tired, because just walking and doing work was painful just with weight on my knees. Whereas it's been, I mean, I'm doing twice as many steps per day on average than I've done for sort of the 5 years before I had the knee done.
That's a surprise for me. Okay. Well, let's say it's a surprise for all of us too. About the swimming, I will come back to that later, but I want to talk about some other things first, so it makes sense what I will ask you about it later. So So you call your work Landscaping Your Life, a down-to-earth transformational toolkit to help you solve problems when stuck or stressed, which of course I love because I'm into permaculture, into gardening, I'm into nature. So how did that come about? How did you figure that out? Did you one morning wake up and had that Landscaping Your Life in your
No.
mind, in your conscious, or how did that happen?
No, it started in an organization in my profession of procurement, so buying for organizations. And we were trying to convince, it was a big bank, and we were trying to convince the other managers that they should be listening to what we were saying, and they weren't. And it's like, you know, we can get passionate about procurement and all of the, you know, tools and techniques and the model, the business models. And no, they weren't listening. And particularly around supplier management. And it's like, well, you know, what can we do to get them to think differently? Because then, you know, we've got suppliers running amok in the organization, but we don't realize it. So I suppose it's a bit like me going back to my knee and going unconsciously, of course we should see suppliers are, you know, running rings around us, but it's become part and parcel of how the day is. And it suddenly dawned on me that certainly here in the UK, we've all either had a garden, visited a garden, you know, we've got so many gardens we can go and visit, we might have plants in our houses. And we all understand that gardens need mowing and pruning and watering and feeding, and some plants need to be think about, well, do we plant them there or do we put them there or time in the greenhouse? And as soon as you said to all these managers who were being very resistant about looking after their suppliers, but what do we do in a garden? You could see the light bulbs going on as they went, oh God, yeah, we've got those suppliers. We're just, I mean, literally most of the time, you know, people have a supplier and they plonk them in the corner and they leave them alone and then wonder why they don't deliver. So we're always the ones whinging about suppliers not delivering, not realizing that we've got a part to play in terms of nurturing them, paying them attention, making sure they're in the right environment. And so as soon as you said that, it was just, you'd gone from resistant people to open to, oh my God, what do we need to do to change how we're working with these suppliers? Yes, I've got a supplier that's, you know, the roots are undermining the house. What can we do? So it just opened the door to them having our support, being able to change how they were with suppliers. So that was the metaphor of sort of supplier management, I suppose, and using gardening as a metaphor for supplier management. And then within a few months, it became clear that, oh, so if you expand the metaphor from gardening to landscapes, then you can apply it to all of life. So then it was Landscaping Your Life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in 2000. And then since then, I've just added more and more tools to the toolkit around using metaphor and specifically nature as a metaphor for helping solve problems, helping us when we're stuck.
I love it. And it's so funny, like just like we talked about the knee and the pain, and it's kind of obvious that when you're in pain, you don't want to walk. To me, it's kind of like obvious that you probably should look after your suppliers and it needed.
Yeah.
You know, and no judgment. I'm just saying, like, if you hear it, well, yeah, duh, you should probably look after your suppliers, right? And here you were having to fight those people and then coming with a simple metaphor, and all of a sudden the light bulb goes on, right? So it's so funny. So I saw you posted on LinkedIn an article also about how we influence others that aren't listening to us. So is that kind of came, did that come out of these resistant managers that didn't look
well
out?
I think the journey's been using nature as a metaphor. So I suppose very generally, initially, it was, let's go out into nature, let's look at nature, let's have, you know, look at the patterns in nature, what can that apply? What's happened over time is I've noticed that we use nature in our language when we're stuck, which is where the book came in. Can't see the wood for the trees. In some cultures, it might be can't see the forest for the trees. It might be can't see the woods for the trees. So, but nevertheless, whatever the phrase is or the idiom is, we're using it to describe being stuck. So I'm stuck in a rut, going round in circles, up a creek without a paddle. So there's lots of idioms that we use that have got a metaphor in them. And I pick up particularly on the nature metaphors that we're using. And then I use the metaphor to solve the problem rather than the logic. And what happened with that post that you mentioned was that came about because people were saying it's like talking to a brick wall. And so, you know, if you think about talking to a brick wall, you know, we can all think of people that it feels like we're talking to a brick wall about, or clients or potential clients or, you know, customers or whatever. The thing is linguistically, and this is where I've done it in workshops and the post says it, and I've had a podcast episode on the subject, is that accurate? If you get a brick wall, if you go and stand in front of a brick wall, which is what I do with people one-on-one, where are you and where is the other person? Well, so far I've never had anybody that says, no, they're still the brick wall. Everybody always goes, oh, they're not the brick wall. There's a brick wall between me and them, which then opens up a completely different set of solutions. Because so long as they're the brick wall, there is nothing we can do because they're a brick wall. They're not going anywhere. They can't talk to us. They can't change. They're going to be the same no matter, you know, if we stand there for the next 3 weeks, they're still going to be a brick wall in 3 weeks' time. So therefore, our language, when we're saying it's like talking to a brick wall, is telling ourselves it's never going to change. They're never going to change. We're not going to be able to do anything different. Might as well give up in our language. And therefore, in this instance, I'm saying, okay, you need to change the language and say, it feels like there's a brick wall between me and the other person. And in some respects, that's what happens in all the other idioms. You know, can't see the wood for the trees. You're using it to say, I'm stuck, I'm overwhelmed, I don't know what to do. But if you were in a real wood, you wouldn't be overwhelmed, not clear what to do, because in a real wood, you'd be able to see the trees and you'd be able to see the paths and the hill that would enable you to get a vantage point and the dead ends and a map. And so suddenly you go from using the words you're using to describe the situation you feel stuck about, using the metaphor within them, to find potential solutions. Granted, they're still metaphorical solutions, but once you've said to your mind, you've basically shifted your mind from there are no solutions, I don't know what to do, to here's a whole load of metaphorical solutions, the mind then is able to translate. What does a map mean? You know, if I was in a real world, I'd get a map out. How does a map relate to that situation you were feeling like you were, you know, couldn't see the wood of the trees about? Oh yeah, I don't know where I want to get to, or I do know where I want to get to. I just keep going down the paths that don't take me towards where I want to go to.
Yeah,
you know, there's all sorts of patterns. I think I've loved patterns since I was a kid. You know, I loved maths, did a statistical analysis thesis at university, so I love patterns. So for me, metaphors are just patterns that we can apply to our lives and help us make sense of the, you know, problems we find ourselves in, really.
Yeah, I think that's where we come from, no, isn't it? Like when we tell children stories, they're often the story is a metaphor for something, how maybe they can grow or how they can evolve or how they could act in a certain situation. But I think so. You mentioned language, and what came to me when you were talking also with that brick wall, as long as we're banging at the brick wall instead of trying to go around it, over top of it, underneath it, or yell to the other side, could you maybe jump up or whatever, It's easier, no? It's like we can just say, oh, I can't do anything because I'm talking to a brick wall. And then when you're actually taking the metaphor and then you realize, oh, there's other ways or more creative ways, it takes us out of the rut, but it also takes us out of passivity, or yeah,
Yes,
is that the right
definitely.
word, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think one of the common themes, one of the common, I suppose there's two common themes. One is self-awareness. We have to understand ourselves. But the other theme, I think, to what a lot of what I do is, you're right, it moves us from blaming others to taking personal responsibility. So it's okay, this is what I can do. Because so long as I do, there's a video on my YouTube channel where I'm banging a door. And I'm sort of keep banging the door and I shout at the door and I'm going, will you open? I want you to open, please open. And I'm shouting at the door and it's not opening because I'm shoving it, pushing it. And yet all I had to do was open it by pulling it. And that's so often what we're doing in life, that we're blaming somebody else because, and we keep doing the same thing, and it's not allowing them to change how they are. You know, so actually, if we keep pushing on the door, they're just going to keep resisting because they're a door that is only opens a particular way. As soon as we start acting differently, then that enables the other person to change their behavior. And it's not about, people often say, oh, I'm just giving in, aren't I? You know, I don't want to, you know, I want to stand up for what I stand up for. All we're doing is changing our language to enable somebody to hear us differently. You know, if I'm acting towards somebody as if they're a brick wall, chances are I'm going to be very judgmental. I might be quite angry in my language. You're not listening, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you're not ever going to change. You know, all of those beliefs in our mind will be coming out in our body language, our tonality. Whereas as soon as we change our own thought, the belief about it, so as soon as we change the belief about, oh, it's just a wall, as you said, to get over, around, through, whatever, suddenly, oh, so how do I do that? And as you said, I could shout over to them, you know, who built the wall? You know, so because quite often walls are just there. I mean, in life, very rarely do most people that I've done workshops with, I've only ever had one hand go up to say they've ever built a real wall. So quite often, I suspect we just use the walls that are already in our lives and sort of try and position us between that person because it's difficult somehow. So I just love playing with the metaphor, not least because it's so much less judgmental that if I have a conversation with you about who built the brick wall, are you really hiding behind the brick wall? Are you using the brick wall as an excuse? It's less judgmental than me going, why aren't you talking to that person? That person's a nice person, really. Because when we start talking about the real life situation, we've got a heck of a lot of energy attached to the narrative and the story we're telling ourselves about that person, this situation, I've tried this before. So long as, to me, and this is personal, but I'm a right so and so, if you give me advice, I will go, no, thought of that before. That didn't work last time I did it. No, that won't work. Whereas give me a metaphor and I go, oh, got you. Yeah. So I always talk about sending logic on a coffee break along with story. So story and logic on a coffee break. Yes, we'll come back to you. But for the time being, let's access, as you said, that inner part of us that, you know, for millennia worked in story and metaphor. Talk to that inner wisdom. Find some different ways of seeing the situation, and then let's go back to logic and the story and go, now I can see, you know, now I've seen the situation a bit more broadly, patterns, not the detail. Oh, okay. Yeah. I just need to chill. I need to go and step over the wall or put my little jumping shoes on and jump over the wall or something.
In all these years that you're using this technique or tool or whatever you want to call it, Ever figured out why we're humans are the way we are? Like you just said, like if somebody tells you do it that way, you're like, and then when you hear a metaphor, all of a sudden you're like, kind of thing. Like,
No, not
no.
really. I mean, I think it is the fact that I suppose there's a few things going on. One, if a picture paints a thousand words, then I say if a picture paints a thousand words, a metaphor paints a thousand pictures. So I think the thing is with a metaphor is you're getting so much more information than if you and I were to talk about a problem. So there's that. You know, if you were to really tell me everything that was going on, you could take an hour and then the coaching session's finished just telling me about the problem. As soon as you tell me it's, oh, I can't see the wood for the trees, we already understand the pattern. We understand a whole load more. And because we then don't have, you know, because we're human beings, our logic is attached to beliefs. It's attached to what we've been saying for so long. So there is a, if I've been telling myself that it's the fault of the other person, that they're the awkward so and so, they're the brick wall, somebody having a conversation with me about what can you do to talk to that person and chill them out, well, I've just spent the last 10 years telling you that they're awkward. It's mean. So we get really attached to what we're saying. Whereas I think that my observation is we forget we're talking about that problem. And therefore, the part of, because we do know, it's like our inner wisdom knows what we want to do. It's just over time, we tell ourselves stories and we get ourselves, I suppose, we talk ourselves into a corner. And it's as if we're looking into the corner and can't see what we're missing. So here I am using metaphor again. So that's what we do when we tell a story, because we're forgetting that there's other perspectives, that we might be using language inaccurately, and therefore, as soon as we start using certain words, that's putting us further into the corner. And therefore, as soon as we start using metaphor, the part of a brain that thinks we're in the corner can stay there. We can go and exit, we can explore 360 degrees, look at those trees, look at this pattern, look at that pattern, and take all of that. And it's unconscious. I think that's the thing. We've taken it in unconsciously. It's gone in at a deeper level than logic. And then we go back to that story with some sympathy, if I'm honest, and some empathy and some caring. And we go, hi, story, hi, logic. I've got a bit more information. Do you want to come back in and let's see how we sort of redo the story, if you will? Now we've got this bigger perspective. Now, what the model, what the theory is about why that works, I don't know, but that's the,
Yeah,
they're the
but
metaphors I use to
yeah.
describe why I think it
No,
works.
but I love that because I just read somewhere too. It's like if you wanted to describe just what you see, just any regular room or whatever, you wouldn't finish ever describing what you see, but you take it in with your whole being in a split second. And so I think your explanation, I at least had a big aha. Yes, that's it resonated. So language, and that's where I talked about this on the podcast before. Language is so powerful, right? How we talk to ourselves, how we talk about situations. And I know I saw somewhere that you wrote a poem about the brick wall even. So language seems to also be an important part in your life, not just how you work, but so where did that start? Like, when did you become interested in language to the point that you even wanted to write a poem? Like, I'm interested in language, but I haven't written a poem, so
Don't know. I think it is because, as I said earlier, I'm really awkward and resistant to people giving me ideas. And so what I learned first was if I wrote a story, so I think stories came before poems, but you're right, at the moment I seem to be using poetry more. But if I was struggling with something, I would write a story. And to be fair, I'd also use it in training courses. So we'd start with a story that related to the topic, and I'd finish the story at the end. And so the story is always very metaphorical. So it's always about a bear or a poet, a poet, oh, what's right? A poppy, that's the word, I can see it, or a poppy or a stone circle. And so for me, I think it was the fact that the words were helping me make sense of the world, but trying to apply some of these very logical models for self-development and increasing self-awareness weren't helping me because my brain is very, very clever at running rings around whatever somebody says. So I will always have an excuse about, no, that won't work. I've tried that before, etc. Whereas writing a story about a woman in a castle and how she's closed all the doors and they've all rusted and she can't get out is much easier to do than say, oh, I've cut myself off from the world. So there's a, it's easy. I'm still able to express it all, and I get the insight. And what I then realized was that when I shared the stories that I wrote for me, then people went, oh my God, can I share that with my client? That's exactly how she, what's happening for her. So I think it's because my stories initially and then poems were written with a self-awareness or a self-development, self-help perspective, i.e., here's a situation. How do I resolve it? So it's my journaling, I suppose.
Okay, so I just wanted
I
to say
think.
it's you started it probably, well, not probably, it might have started like you said with journaling and then creating stories to help you first. Yeah, that's interesting. That's
I think so. And then I suppose I've just then I've discovered that people like it, and so then it just on the podcast, so series three of the podcast, so Landscaping Your Life podcast, I started adding poems in for each episode, and sometimes it's a poem I'd already written that was relevant to the subject, and then more latterly it was a oh, I'm doing a podcast, an episode on talking to the brick wall. I do all the exploration in nature, then I'd write the poem. And the poem just pulls together all the insights. And it's just a gorgeous, I think it's a gorgeous way of getting all the insights that are there. So it's just a story. So I'm in the process of writing my next book. And what I realize is each chapter is going to have a story, a poem, and then a logic. The explanation of why say what I say in the poem, or why, or the logic for somebody that doesn't get the story or doesn't res why am I being told a story about a poppy spreading its seeds and etc. So, because I appreciate that's not, whereas then there'll be the logic. So yeah, I think it's just it's arisen out of something that absolutely works for me. So it's not a oh, I'm going to write this story for other people. Oh, this is real for me in the moment now. And then I'll share it and other people will go,
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm wondering whether fairy tales back in the day started that way too, or like it's like
Yeah.
the adults possibly needed an explanation for what's going on in their life, and then they told the story later to their children or to other adults, and they, oh, that helps me too. And so that's how it started spreading. That's really interesting. I also find it interesting to look at like what you're saying, landscaping your life, basically, like looking at your life, whether it's in the physical world or the mental world or the emotional world, as a landscape, right? And so, like, when I help my clients deal with clutter, and whether that's physical clutter, financial clutter, whatever, they could look at it as a landscape, and then maybe find easier access to why they're clinging on to certain things. Because, and I make nature references sometimes too. I say, like, in nature, no, nothing can cling to something like some people do with the clutter or whatever, because it's like it's growing, it's flourishing, and then it's dying and going back into the earth to become compost to grow again. And if we would at some point halt or stop this would mess up everything, right? So, and that's what we're basically doing in our own life when we're clinging to things.
Yeah, lovely. I like that.
Let's see where we want to go. You call it a toolkit landscaping your life. So you use metaphors, you use nature. What are other tools that you're using? I'm just curious.
Well, interesting, landscape, I've come up with the acronym. And so it sort of ends up being, you know, laughter, analogy, metaphor, poems, stories. So so there's all those drawing, collage, the word that always escapes me, absurdity. So I just think they're all of who I am that goes into the toolkit. So there's
What's the last one?
Absurdity.
What are you doing there?
Absurdity is just doing something really stupid where somebody goes, why would you do that? Yeah, exactly. And so I think the thing might be is when I couldn't do it, but I wished I'd been able to. I'd have been able to do it when I was younger. Was talk to a brick wall, doing a handstand against the brick wall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So or doing it with, you know, a handstand facing the brick wall. I did try to do it the other week with my personal trainer, who sometimes takes the photographs for me. And he's going, I don't know that this is a good thing to do, Alice. You're going to injure yourself. But the thing is that it's the laughter of if we think we're talking to a brick wall, and you say, go and do a handstand facing the brick wall and try and have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help but laugh, and it's that in the laughter something shifts. You know, it comes back, it completely comes back to your, if we're holding on so tightly to something, you know, we've really got to do something quite, and we've held on for it forever, so actually, you know, those vines are going round and round, and it's really, you know, hard to let go. Then we do need to do something in order to shift our mindset, in order for us to go, oh yeah, that isn't serving me, is it? Laughter, absurdity, and all of the techniques I suppose I've pulled together are all a bit unconventional, because they're the quickest way I know, because I get bored easily. So if I was there having sessions with people, and you know, each week we were having the same conversation. So I've pulled together tools that are really quick. So asking somebody to do a handstand against a wall is a really quick way for them to go, this is absurd, but this is what I am doing with that person.
Yeah, it's almost like snapping them out of the stuckness.
Yes, by doing it, it's as if by doing it. So I'm not suggesting everybody rushes out to the sea, but if you're treading water, one episode of the podcast, I go out and tread water for you, and I'm there with my selfie stick out of the water, treading water, sharing insight. But it's if in a situation in your life it feels like you're treading water, it's like it's tiring, you've been doing it for a long time, it's like at some point I'm going to lose energy, and it's really easy to just keep believing that the only thing you can do is tread water. So I just need to tread water, I'm going to keep treading water, without any understanding of when are you going to stop treading water? What is it? And so when you're in the water, I'll put my foot down. Oh, I'll float.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's that paddle boarder, I'll ask them for help. And suddenly I've got to keep treading water, I've got to keep treading water, more, 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 more. The hold on that relaxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, I don't have to keep treading water. I've got an option. I can get out of the sea.
Yeah, you could just get out of the water. This is the perfect transition to, you touched on it in the beginning, that you're going into this cold water, like 7 degrees water, 44 Fahrenheit for those that think in Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Sounds incredibly cold. So I had to have foot surgery in May, and my doctor always said it would be good if you would go in the pool. So I went into the pool as long as the weather was nice. But now it's way too cold. But you go into the 7 degrees ocean, I think it is, right? The sea. Brr. So, so I have a two-part question here. So what mental clutter, if any, did you have to overcome to step into this cold water? Because I think I read on your website that in the beginning you didn't think you could go in it, and then you did.
No. Yeah.
And the second part is also, is like, what clutter does the cold water help us let go? And you kind of touched on this just with what you said before, that it sometimes opens up more possibilities. So
So what mental clutter gets me in there? I don't know. I mean, it was interesting because I'd always, you know, if you look around my house, all the pictures I've got, photographs I've got are of water.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go swimming with my nan, my grandma. You know, she was mid-50s when she died, but she was still swimming with us. So I'd always swam, and then I'd always wanted to live near the sea. I then found, you know, 20 years ago nearly, found a reason to be near the sea.
Mm-hmm.
But for some unknown reason, never thought, you know, the belief was, the logic said, it's cold, I can't do that. It's cold,
that
I can't.
Be my logic.
Yeah. And to be fair, I wasn't really seeing many people proving me wrong either. So there weren't lots of people in the sea going, hi, it's lovely here.
Yeah.
And then one occasion I was a bit further south and decided to go swimming because it was a hot day, it was a summer. And then I went, oh, I'm loving this. And then went, but the sea's not going to be any different to temperature, because I really wasn't that, I mean, it was 3 hours south, but
mm-hmm.
sea temperature's the same. And so I came home and went, and I looked up the temperature. And so it was summer. So the first time I went swimming was summer. So the temperature had got up to about 12 degrees at that point. So that's 50 something, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 50 something.
Mm-hmm. And then, and to be fair, what's happened since then is I don't mind how cold it is. Not strictly true. I have a wetsuit now. So the first year...
You're cheating.
To be fair, only because then I can stay in for a bit longer.
Yeah.
So some people in the winter will go down to the sea and will really enjoy a 2 minute dip and mm-hmm. come back out again. And to me, it's like, what? I've got to go walk down there. I'd rather go in for two minutes. Yeah. So I think for me, and I can remember having a conversation with the lifeguard one time, because I said, oh, I only ever go when it's sunny. I said, and so perhaps I ought to learn how to go when it's raining or horrible or grey. And she said, but you enjoy it when it's sunny. You know, you're not telling me that you're swimming for fitness necessarily. You're not swimming mm-hmm. because, you know what I mean? I haven't got this, I want to swim across the channel, so I've got to be, you know, training for that. I'm going swimming because I enjoy the connection with nature and being immersed in nature and the grounding of it. And I appreciate that I should be able to get that when the sun isn't shining, but I don't. So for me, I mean, the best time is, or we're coming round to it at the moment because of the movement of the sun, is that I can see the sun, I can be in the sea when the sun is rising mm-hmm. sort of up from the sea. Mm-hmm. Here. And I've been in at sort of 7:30 in the morning at frost on the sand. but for me, I mean, I'm just in just, oh God, thank you, nature.
Because you're a polar bear.
the sun is rising, you've got the pinks in the sky, you've got it mm-hmm. reflected on the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if it's a bit blowy and the sea's a bit choppy. No, calm sea, clear sea, beautiful mm. sun. And of course you get sun even if it's chilly. So yeah, so this cold, and I'm not great in hot weather. So anything over 20 degrees, I don't like, and I get very uncomfortable. So I do think my thermostat is about 10 degrees from a, you know, that towards cold.
You're definitely a polar bear.
I definitely cope better in, you know, I moved to Scotland, and a lot of people talk about, you know, because the weather here is a bit, well, it is colder than down south. But I'm happier, you know, in the summer, I'm happier because it doesn't get as warm here, you know.
It's funny.
And then you asked me about clutter.
The part B was just like, how does the cold water help you, or maybe not necessarily you, but just in general, how would something like cold water, and you can use it as a metaphor, like how would something like cold water help us release clutter?
I suppose this is where I do go back to what I've read in terms of I always feel calmer after a swim. So the more, so there is something about the more agitated or out of sorts I am, the more I might see a little glimmer of sun and go in the sea. It's like, oh, that's enough, you know. And I think what they talk about is that, you know, these days we have stress hormones going around our body and we've got nothing to do with it. We haven't got those saber-toothed tigers to fight off. So we don't run away from a tiger or whatever. So we don't use up. So something happens in our lives, we, you know, stress floods our body, and yet we haven't got anything to, our body isn't able to use it up. So it's still floating around going, well, I'm supposed to be stressed, you know, I'm stressed. And historically, you know, that animal that runs away from the lion, or the human that runs away from the lion, has the stress hormones, runs away from the lion, uses up the stress hormone, and then calms down immediately. We don't. So what going into the water does is, because it is stressful, it is, you know, we could die if we get if it's too cold. So it is a stressful situation. So our body goes, oh, a stressful situation. And you can feel, I can feel my body protecting me. It's like the first few minutes is really painful because it's in shock. It's going, I want you to get out of here. I want you to get out of here. Get out of here. Please get out of here. And then your body goes, she's not getting out of here. Okay, she's not getting out of here. Oh, we need to do something now to look after her, because if she doesn't get out of here, this isn't going to
We
be
have to
good.
protect her.
Yeah. So then the it's like all the, because I always say it feels like there's I can feel it sometimes. It's a bit like it's not quite a brick wall, but there's like a barrier goes up around the heart, and it's like, right, we're protecting the heart now. You know, the internal organs that need protecting are now protective because you're going to be swimming in this cold water. And that has absorbed all of the, you know, stresses or whatever. So when you get out of the water, it's as if you've left, or for me, it's as if you've left any stress in the water. Added to which, I love the connection with nature. I do quite a lot of some of the Native American Indian type exercise, sort of techniques that I'd learned to do on land, and I do them in the sea, just about connecting with, you know, grandfather sky, grandmother earth, and so just, yeah, so I do think for me it's like, oh, I you know, I'm in nature, I'm part of nature, I am one with nature, and then you come out and you can't help but carry that oneness with nature with me, really.
Okay, I love that. That's really beautiful explanation. And I could totally see that if I would live near the ocean, like my ocean is 45 minutes away, so I'm not going to drive down there to go sit 2 minutes in the water, but I could totally see. No, I was always wondering, because now there's this big fad about people's jumping into these ice buckets or ice bathtub, and
Nice
I'm like,
bounce,
why
yeah.
the F would you do that to yourself? But when you're explaining it the way you're doing, I can see, and I think it takes you probably right away into the now, into the body too, and everything. So that
Definitely.
definitely helps. So I can see how this helps with all kinds of clutter. Yeah. So we need to be a little bit mindful. I could chit chat with you forever, but so let's quickly tell people where they can find you if they're now intrigued. They want to read your poems, they want to read your books. I know you wrote two so far. You're in the works of a third one, you just said. Where can they find you?
There's lots of Alison Smiths, so you're in
Mm-hmm.
danger of
I
going
would
on a bit of a
imagine.
hunt. Yeah. So Landscaping Your Life will find me because that's not used anywhere else. So if you
Okay.
did Landscaping Your Life, Alison, as well, then absolutely. So Landscaping Your Life is the name of the podcast. Landscaping Your Life is also the tagline in the book. So the books can't see the wood for the trees. But if you put Landscaping Your Life into Amazon, you'll find the book. It's also the name of my company. So that will turn up on the company page on LinkedIn. And yeah, we've got an Instagram, LinkedIn, Landscaping Your Life page. We've just gone on to TikTok, Facebook. I have people that help me with those sorts of things. But I do the videos. It's like, well, I'll go out and do the videos, but what? Somebody else can put it somewhere. But
Okay, so they should
okay.
find you, and I will put the links in the show notes too. So you don't have a preferred method that they contact you. They could just come
Yeah,
from all angles.
from all, yeah, definitely.
Come out
And
of the woods from
whatever,
all angles.
yeah, and whatever makes most sense for them, really. The podcast is quite a good place to start, not least because you can, especially if you've got a problem, then go to the podcast. There's 64 or 5 episodes so far. Pick a chat, pick an episode that resonates with how you're feeling because the headings describe how you would be feeling. And then just listen as I explore the metaphor, really.
Yeah, definitely we'll put the links in the show notes so that people can go check it out. My last question is usually, did I not ask something that you wish I would have asked? It's like
Oh.
something that burns in you that wants to come out still.
Well, I think it's about that we've got the answers ourselves. So when we're struggling, it's like we just need to find a way to connect in. So I'm giving you the answer rather than what the question would have been. But it's that we have our own inner wisdom. We need to find ways of accessing it. We'll all have different ways. Some people might just go for a run and that happens. But I think it's patience. It's like, what's the biggest, as so the question would be, what's the biggest lesson we can learn from nature? And for me, it's patience. And
Are
I
you
think
good
you
at
mentioned it.
patience? Because I'm not.
And it well, and you mentioned earlier about something relating to, I can't think now, my brain's gone. But it's that, it was the timing of nature. It's that whole, we don't expect if sunrise. Like at the moment, we're talking near equinox. So, sunrise isn't going to happen, gradually at the moment here in the North Hemisphere, then sunrise is getting later in the morning. But we don't suddenly expect it to be, an hour earlier or any closer to sunset. In the same way, and again, different parts of the world have different seasons. So, we have four seasons. Some areas of the world have two seasons, and I understand some northern ones have six seasons. Who knew? I didn't know, but I found that out. But there are seasons, and we don't expect winter. Although, you see, I'm saying this, but today my neighbour showed me some strawberries. So we're recording this in autumn. And I've got white strawberries because there isn't enough sun to make them go red, but they've been confused enough with weather to actually produce more strawberries. However, generally speaking, we don't have a lot, so I've just proved, but
Yeah,
we're only
I
dipping
just wanted
into.
to say I have white strawberries too. They're called pineapple strawberries, but they're usually grow in spring. Google it. And they're lovely. They're so tasteful. Yeah, but
Well, these are definitely red strawberries because they were red strawberries
yeah,
early
they
in
were
the
red
season.
strawberries.
Yeah,
No, mine are
so
always white.
yeah, but But I think the thing is that we don't expect nature to do things out of sync. It's sort of like spring follows winter, day, night, tides, it's the, although people do turn up at the beach here. Oh, well, the tide was ideal for swimming last week. It's like, yeah, but the tide isn't the
Yeah.
same every.
But that's how
So,
people are disconnected from nature because they don't realize stuff like that.
yes, I'm really amazed at the conversations.
Yeah.
So, so I think it's that we sow a seed quite often in spring, although sometimes you might do like a bulb in the autumn, but you don't expect it to automatically,
Bloom at
produce
Christmas.
something. Yeah. So it's sort of a don't poke the seed, plant it, sow it. Sow more seeds than you want, because you're never going to just sow one seed and then hope that put all of your faith in that one seed. It's like you have to, that's why oak trees have so many acorns. That's why, every plant, dandelion, how many seeds has that got? So, get lots of seeds, sow them, and then look after them. So, put them somewhere, tender them, nurture them, and don't get angry because, and certainly don't start on. On them
Digging
up
them up
to just,
again.
oh, are you working? You're working. We have to have faith and trust in ourselves and our ideas in the same way as we have trust and faith in nature. And I think that's what we can learn from nature in terms of, so if you're, oh, I've missed the tide, I've missed the tide, oh, I've won the, missed that perfect moment. But there's another tide here in 12 and a half
There's the
hours'
next one
time.
coming.
So, let's just get ourselves sort of more prepared and ready for that next tide, rather than worrying about the tide we've just missed.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Alison, for coming on and sharing
All
your
right.
wisdom based on nature with us. I loved our conversation. Like I said, I could chat forever,
Happy to.
but we wrap it up now. Thanks so much.
Thank you.